This is the Healthy Living Podcast on OWL Radio, a community service of the Low Vision Resource Center. OWL Radio broadcasts to homes in San Antonio, the Hill Country, San Antonio Methodist Hospitals, and via online streaming and smartphone access. You can also ask your Alexa device to enable and play OWL Radio. Welcome. I am Martha Attee. This program is being recorded on December 26, 2023. The topics today are: just 2 minutes of walking are surprisingly good for you. Next, is turmeric good for you? But the first article I will read is titled, "Omicron, now 2 years old, is not done with us yet." This is from the New York Times, written by Carl Zimmer, and dated November 21, 2023. By November of 2021, nearly 2 years after the coronavirus emerged in Wuhan and spread across the world, the surprises seemed to be over. More than 4 billion people had been vaccinated against the virus. 5 million people had died. Two new variants, known as Alpha and Delta, had surged and then ebbed. As Thanksgiving approached in 2021, many Americans were planning to resume traveling for the holiday. And then, after Turkey Day, the pandemic delivered a big new surprise. Researchers in Botswana and in South Africa alerted the world that a highly mutated version of the virus had emerged and was spreading fast. Omicron, as the World Health Organization called the variant, swiftly overtook other forms of the virus. It remains dominant now on its second anniversary. In the 2 years since its emergence, Omicron has proved to be not only staggeringly infectious, but an evolutionary marvel, challenging many assumptions virologists had before the pandemic. It has given rise to an impressive number of descendants, which have become far more adept at evading immunity and finding new victims. Adam Laurig, a virologist at the University of Michigan, said, "It was almost like there was another pandemic." Dr. Laurig and other Omicron watchers are now trying to make sense of the past 2 years in order to prepare for the future. It's possible that Omicron will become a permanent part of life, steadily mutating like seasonal influenza. But researchers warn that the virus still has the capacity to surprise us, especially if we stop paying close attention. When Omicron first came to light, the United States and other countries wrongly believed they could stop its spread by banning travel from South Africa. In reality, it had already spread far and wide. In a matter of days, Britain, Italy, and Germany discovered Omicron in positive COVID tests. Omicron's gift for spreading fast was the result of dozens of mutations. They altered the virus's surface so that antibodies produced by vaccines or previous infections could not stick tightly to it and prevent the virus from invading cells. Dr. Jacob Lemieux, an infectious disease specialist at Mass General Hospital, said, quote, "It was the first virus to figure out in a major way how to escape immunity." Dr. Lemieux and other Omicron experts suspect that the variant gained its new mutations while infecting a single person with a weak immune system. Immunocompromised people can only fight off some of the coronaviruses in their bodies during an infection, allowing the ones that remain to acquire mutations that can thwart the immune system. It becomes like a laboratory for the virus, said Peter Markoff, a virologist at the London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine. As epidemiologists tracked the Omicron wave in late 2021, they saw a crucial difference from earlier surges. Compared with previous variants, Omicron put a smaller fraction of infected people in the hospital. One reason for that shift was that so many people had immunity to the earlier forms of the coronavirus. Our immune defenses include not just antibodies, but special immune cells that can recognize and kill infected cells. This second line of defense held up even against Omicron, preventing many of the new infections from becoming severe. Still, Omicron caused so many new infections. The initial wave infected almost half of all Americans, this according to one recent estimate, that it still unleashed a devastating wave of hospitalizations. The Omicron surge hit the United States and most other countries in early 2022. China managed to hold back the waves with its zero COVID policy. But protests against its brutality grew so intense that President Xi Jinping dropped it abruptly in November of 2022. Then the floodgates opened. Within a few weeks, more than a billion Chinese people contracted Omicron. This resulted in over a million deaths. As Omicron moved from person to person, its descendants gained more mutations. Sometimes two Omicron viruses would wind up in the same cell, which would produce new hybrid viruses with a mix of their genes. One of these so-called recombinations hit the jackpot by mixing together two sets of evasive mutations. The result was a new hybrid called XBB. XBB easily infected people, even those who had already been infected with Alpha, Delta, or an earlier form of Omicron. As a result, XBB became the dominant in the United States in early 2023. Vaccine makers tried to keep up with Omicron's rapid evolution. In August of 2022, the Food and Drug Administration authorized booster shots that targeted BA.5 Omicron variant, which was then dominant. In September of 2023, the agency authorized an XBB shot. But XBB is now ebbing as a menagerie of even more evasive variants. Mark Johnson, a virologist at the University of Missouri, said, "Right now we're in a period of chaos." Several Omicron experts said the chaos might soon end. In August, a variant called BA.2.86 emerged with a host of new mutations, likely the result, once again, of evolution taking place in an immunocompromised person. At first, BA.2.86 did not seem to live up to its genetic potential, failing to spread fast. Quote, "If genetics was all that mattered, it would have gotten its own Greek letter," said Thomas Peake, a virologist of the Pierrebrot Institute in Woking, England. But he said BA.2.86 was a bit of a damp squib. Over the past few months, however, the BA.2.86 lineage seems to have kicked into high gear, gaining a mutation that allows it to evade even more antibodies. JN.1, as this mutated form is known, has become the most resistant version of the coronavirus. It appears to be growing quickly in France and may soon spread to other countries. It's hard to predict the future path of a new variant like JN.1. Its success will depend on what kind of immune defenses it encounters while spreading from host to host. At the outset of the pandemic, things were simpler because no one had developed immunity to the coronavirus. Michael Lasig, an evolutionary biologist at the University of Cologne, said, "At the beginning, we were all one big kindergarten. Today, in contrast, most people on Earth have immunity of one form or another, whether from a natural infection, vaccination, or both. The virus sees a much more complex system," said Dr. Lasig. "This worldwide immunity means that a smaller fraction of people will die than did at the start of the pandemic. Still, Omicron's toll remains heavy. The United States Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found that between October of 2022 and September of 2023, more than 80,000 people died of COVID, more than 8 times as many of those who died of influenza. As Omicron continues to evolve, epidemiologists still see a benefit to vaccinations." Justin Lessler, a researcher at the University of North Carolina, and his colleagues recently ran a projection of future COVID infections and concluded that annual vaccination campaigns could save up to 49,000 lives a year. "Those vaccinations will be more effective if they're updated to keep up with the evolving virus." But Katrina Lithgow, a biologist at Oxford University, worries that their development will slow down as governments stop paying for genetic sequencing of new variants. "If we don't do sequencing, then we won't be able to see the changes," she said. This article, written by Carl Zimmer, who covers news about science for the New York Times and writes the column called Origins. And you are listening to the Healthy Living Podcast. We'll change topics and go to what can turmeric actually do for your health? A new study concluded that it could be effective in alleviating stomach discomfort, but a lot is unknown. This is written by Alice Callahan and was printed in September 13, 2023, in the New York Times. And turmeric can be pronounced turmeric. It can also be pronounced turmeric. Both are acceptable. Turmeric has been used as a spice and medicine for thousands of years. And in recent decades, it's become a popular dietary supplement, It's often sold as curcumin, and that's spelled C-U-R-C-U-M-I-N, which is a chemical compound found in dried turmeric. With claims that it can soothe joint pain, reduce inflammation, and improve mobility. In Thailand, turmeric is often consumed in its spice or supplement form to quell gastrointestinal symptoms like bloating and indigestion, said Dr. Krit Prongpuril, an associate professor of preventative and social medicine at the University Chulalongkorn in Bangkok. But only a few small studies have evaluated those benefits. In a trial published in the journal BMJ Evidence-Based Medicine, Dr. Prongpuril and his colleagues tested whether curcumin supplements could help patients with functional dyspepsia, a common gastrointestinal condition that causes stomach pain and feelings of fullness, nausea, and bloating after meals. For the 8-week trial, the researchers split 206 people with functional dyspepsia into 3 randomly assigned groups. One that took 20 milligrams of omeprazole, which is a medication that reduces stomach acid. They took the 20 milligrams of omeprazole once a day. Another that took 250 milligram capsules of curcumin 4 times a day. And then a third group that took both omeprazole and curcumin in the above doses every day. There were 151 patients who completed the study, and at four and 8 weeks, all 3 groups reported similar reductions in symptoms such as pain, belching, heartburn, and bloating. According to Dr. Pong Peril, the curcumin seemed to be just as effective at reducing symptoms of functional dyspepsia as the omeprazole. Few side effects were reported, though the authors noted that longer-term studies were needed to assess the supplement's risks and benefits. Dr. Brian Lacey, a gastroenterologist and professor of medicine at the Mayo Clinic in Jacksonville, Florida, said that despite these promising results, he would hesitate to recommend curcumin supplements to his patients based on this study alone. The results would have been more convincing if the study had included a placebo group, he said. Without one, it's impossible to know if the participants' responses were from the treatment, from the placebo effect, or from the passing of time. That said, functional dyspepsia causes serious discomfort, Dr. Lacey said. And in the United States, there are no medications approved to treat the condition. Omeprazole, which is commonly used off-label, seems to help only about 1 in 10 of the patients. Without better treatments, Dr. Lacey said, those who prefer natural or herbal products could confidently use this data to say, quote, let's try the curcumin first. But Dr. Mahtab Jafari, a professor of pharmaceutical sciences at the University of California in Irvine, cautioned that patients with painful gastrointestinal symptoms should not use curcumin without a proper medical evaluation first. And because dietary supplements are poorly regulated, there are important caveats to keep in mind. Can turmeric help with other conditions? Turmeric and curcumin are among the most studied dietary supplements, said Dr. Janet Funk, a professor of medicine at the University of Arizona. In a sweeping review published in March, Dr. Funk and her colleagues evaluated 389 clinical trials on how curcumin supplements may influence various health conditions, including type 2 diabetes, osteoarthritis, digestive conditions, cancer, and dementia. Many were small studies and were not well designed, she said, but the evidence did suggest that the supplements were probably helpful for osteoarthritis and potentially helpful for people with insulin resistance or diabetes. The composition of the products used in those studies varied widely, Dr. Funk cautioned, and so do the supplements currently on the market. That makes it difficult to take promising results for a supplement in a trial and find one in a store to match it. Curcumin supplements have also been found to have some potentially harmful contaminants. In one study published in 2018, Dr. Funk and her colleagues analyzed 35 curcumin supplements and found lead in all but one of the products. They also found residues of toxic industrial solvents like toluene, a chemical found in paint, nail polish, and gasoline, in 25 of the products tested, though the solvent levels were below limits generally believed to be safe. And many of the curcumin supplements included piperine, an extract of black pepper, which increases the absorption of curcumin, but can also interfere with some medications. Dr. Jafari, who studies curcumin in her own lab, said she is confident that it has real anti-inflammatory effects, but given the lack of large, well-designed trials and industry regulation, she does not recommend curcumin supplements. Before using any dietary supplement, check that it has been verified by trusted third-party organizations like the U.S. Pharmacopeia, NSF, or ConsumerLab.com, Dr. Jafari said. You should also check with your own healthcare provider for possible interactions with medications or interference with tests you might need, and continue to monitor yourself for any side effects of taking that supplement. But given the concerns about purity and safety of turmeric supplements, the best use of the plant might be its oldest use. Dr. Jafari said, buy the turmeric roots, grind them up, put them in your food, and enjoy them. And we have one last topic for this episode of the Healthy Living Podcast, titled, Just 2 Minutes of Walking After a Meal is Surprisingly Good for You. A new paper suggests that it takes far less exercise than was previously thought to lower blood sugar after eating. This was written August 4th, 2022 by Rachel Fairbank. Walking after a meal, conventional wisdom says, helps clear your mind and aids in digestion. Scientists have also found that going for a 15-minute walk after a meal can reduce blood sugar levels, which can help ward off complications, such as type 2 diabetes. But as it turns out, even just a few minutes of walking can activate these benefits. In a meta-analysis recently published in the Journal of Sports Medicine, researchers looked at the results of 7 studies that compared the effects of sitting versus standing or walking on measures of heart health, including insulin and blood sugar levels. They found that light walking after a meal, in increments of as little as 2 to 5 minutes, had a significant impact in moderating blood sugar levels. Dr. Kershaw Patel, a preventative cardiologist at Houston Medical Hospital, who was not involved in the study, said, "Each small thing you do will have benefits, even if it's a small step." In 5 of the studies that the paper evaluated, none of the participants had prediabetes or type 2 diabetes. The remaining 2 studies looked at people with and without such illnesses. Participants were asked to either stand or walk for 2 to 5 minutes every 20 to 30 minutes over the course of a full day. All 7 studies showed that just a few minutes of light intensity walking after a meal were enough to significantly improve blood sugar levels compared to, say, sitting at a desk or plopping down on the couch. When participants went for a short walk, their blood sugar levels rose and fell more gradually. For people with diabetes, avoiding sharp fluctuations in blood sugar levels is a critical component of managing their illness. It's also thought that sharp spikes and crashes in blood sugar levels can contribute to developing type 2 diabetes. Standing also helped lower blood sugar levels, although not to the degree that light walking did. Standing did have a small benefit, said graduate student Aidan Buffy at the University of Limerick in Ireland and an author of the paper, said. Compared to sitting, standing light intensity walking was a superior intervention. That's because light walking requires more active engagement of muscles than standing and uses the fuel from food at a time when there's a lot of it circulating in the bloodstream. Quote, your muscles will soak up some of that excess glucose, said Jesse Inchipesky, author of the book Glucose Revolution, The Life-Changing Power of Balancing Your Blood Sugar. You still had the same meal, but the impact of your body will be lessened, she said. Walking within 60 to 90 minutes after eating delivers the best results. Although light walking at any time is good for your health, a short walk within 60 to 90 minutes of eating a meal can be especially useful in minimizing blood sugar spikes, as that is when the blood sugar levels tend to peak. He's also recommending getting up and doing housework or finding other ways to move your body. This short amount of activity will also enhance other dietary changes that people may have been making to help control their blood sugar levels. Dr. Ian Ashley, a cardiologist at Stanford University who was not associated with the study, said, moving even a little bit is worthwhile and can lead to measurable changes. Mr. Buffy, whose research focuses on physical activity interventions in workplace environments, noted that a mini walk of 2 to 3 minutes is more practical during the workday. People are not going to get up and run on a treadmill or run around the office. For people working from home, he suggested a short walk around the block between Zoom meetings after lunch. The benefits of physical activity are never all or nothing, said Dr. Patel, but instead exist on a continuum. Quote, it's a gradual effect of more activity, better health. Each incremental step, each incremental stand or brisk walk appears to have a benefit. And we've come to the end of the Healthy Living Podcast. This was being recorded on December 26, 2023. If you have questions or comments about the program, please call 210-829-4223. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. I am Martha Attee, and I want to thank you for listening, and now I'll say goodbye from Owl Radio.